Welcome to the Archives of the Loralee Show, Conversation for Exploration. Timeless discussions to challenge and expand our worldview. And while you may find our guests fascinating, the views expressed may not necessarily reflect those of our own or of the Cuyamangue Institute. That's why we call it Conversation for Exploration. And join in our ongoing live events, interviews, our own presentations, and much, much more as we go exploring. Learn more at CuyamangueInstitute.com and Loralee.com. And hello there, I'm Loralee, and thanks for tuning into Conversation for Exploration. And hello there, I'm Loralee. Nikola Tesla is the man who invented the 20th century, says Robert Lomas, our first guest. He's a physicist, and he lectures in engineering management at Bradford University in Yorkshire, England. He's a lifelong enthusiast for Nikola Tesla. Early as a boy, he found in some dusty old shop an early piece of Tesla technology that set him on the path to understand this man who he says was maddeningly at the same time a genius and yet so stupid about his own affairs. In fact, Robert also teaches a course in business management to engineers, and he uses Tesla as a model of how not to do business. So in the next 2 hours, Robert will cover some intriguing insights into the life of Nikola Tesla, a few what-ifs. What if Nikola Tesla had conducted his business affairs a bit differently? Would we be even more advanced in the technology that we use? And how is it that a man who invented so much of the foundations of modern technology, from radio to bladeless turbines to wireless power to the prototypes of so many inventions we use today, how could he have died a pauper and virtually unknown today? Unless you really seek him out, you don't know a lot about Nikola Tesla. Just check any textbook. Robert joins us from the UK. Hello, Robert. Thanks for being here tonight.
Good evening, Laura, and thanks for having me on the show.
Well, I really enjoyed your newest book, The Man Who Invented the 20th Century, good title, Nikola Tesla, Forgotten Genius of Electricity. And it is nice to have someone who knows and understands electricity tell us about Tesla, since that was the foundation of so much of his work. So I appreciate your perspective on all of this. And I also want to mention, Robert has been a guest on the show before. He and Chris Knight wrote a couple of other books, most recently Uriel's Machine, looking at very ancient technology of a total genius and simplicity. And he also gave us some wonderful discourse on the insights behind the Shroud of Turin. And earlier than that, Freemasons' reconnection to ancient Egypt and Sumeria. So you really put your fingers in a lot of interesting pies, don't you?
I've been trained as a scientist, and I'm afraid it's made me rather nosy.
You put your curiosity to good effect. Tell me about when you were a boy, how you latched on to Tesla and your discovery of one of his early therapeutic electromagnifying machines, or whatever it's called.
Well, I was interested in radio, and as a youngster, I had saved up, and I was looking for one of the classic American radios, which were about just after the war, a device called the AR-88, enormous great radio. It covered all the short waves. You could listen worldwide with it. And you could pick them up in ex-government surplus shops. I was wandering around looking for one of these, and I never actually found one. I didn't own one until a number of years later. What I did find was a polished wooden box, and inside it a very strange device, which was actually a Tesla electrotherapy machine. Hmm. I didn't know who Tesla was or what an electrotherapy machine was, but I managed to get the thing working. It came with instructions. It needed a battery, and I managed to get a battery for it and got it working. It was actually a sort of electric shock machine, and it gave you very high frequency electric shocks, and it made all sorts of grand claims that it could revitalize the system and get rid of dead skin and make you feel better, and all sorts of other other claims. It sounded rather like snake oil.
This is before the FDA, right?
That's right.
They won't let you make such claims today, but go ahead.
Whether or not it ever did or not, I never got as far as trying, but one of the things it did impress on me was that he was able to create very high frequency, very high voltage electric power. Mm-hmm. And the aim of this was that it came with electrodes which you could connect to yourself, and you could pass high frequency currents through yourself. And so it was rather like a very simply electric shock machine. And that's really what got me interested in Nikola Tesla, how he managed to take the power from a very low voltage DC battery and transform it into something that was a very high frequency pulsing current, which sort of gave you this very strange tingling feeling when you touched it. But it didn't harm you in any way. In fact, it did make you feel rather exhilarated.
You know, here was a man who really understood electricity and really looked at the Earth as a giant magnet with two poles, North and South Pole, and B, a giant capacitor with an electric current, as you write in your book. Tell me a little bit, just so anyone who's not familiar with Tesla understands the magnitude of his contributions. How many patents did he own? What were his contributions that we still use today? What were some of the inventions that we credit to others that really, had things been played out a little differently, would have rightfully been accredited to him?
Well, I think probably the most important thing he did was that he developed a complete integrated system for alternating current. An alternating current is the type of current that comes out of the main socket in your house. It's the sort of thing that you see transmitted on the power pylons that run around the country. And it's very, very different from the very first electricity that was made in public supplies. That was DC electricity, which is rather like the electricity you get out of a battery. That doesn't change direction, whereas the current we use out of the mains changes direction very, very rapidly. It changes direction at least 60 times a second. It reverses and changes, and it goes down to zero and restarts. Now, you may wonder, why on earth would we want something which changes so rapidly? And the reason is that you cannot transmit DC power very far. It actually won't work over a great distance. And the very first power station that was built in Pearl Street in New York by Thomas Edison, it would only transmit its power up to a half a mile from around the power station. So if we'd continued with the Edison system of electric power, everybody would have to live within half a mile of a power station. And what Nikola Tesla did was make it possible to transmit power over much, much greater distances. And the AC current that he uses, you can actually transmit over thousands of miles. And the trick he had was that he could turn it into very high voltage, very low current to transmit it over a long distance, and then transform it back down to a high current and a lower voltage when he actually wanted to use it.
And this was because to send it over long distances, you needed it one way. To actually use it, you needed it the opposite way. So that's why we have transformers.
That's right. So okay. you'll have seen all over the countryside, you'll have great high power cables, which are very, very high voltage. They're actually millions of volts. And then when you're actually using it in your house, it's stepped down to a much lower voltage, to a few hundreds of volts. And the big machines that step this down, that you'll see them with great insulators, and you hear them buzzing and hissing in the damp air, these are the transformers and the local substations, which reduce the voltage for local use. And as they reduce the voltage, also serve to increase the current. Hmm. Now, one of the problems with electricity is you need a lot of wire to carry a lot of current. If you want to plug a lot of lights in, you need very, very thick wires. Unless you can transmit the voltage at a very high voltage, then you can get away with small amounts of current. Now, the thing about the DC voltage that Edison created was that you couldn't do this. You couldn't transmit it at high voltage and low current and then switch it back down. So effectively, you had to transmit it at the voltage you wanted to use it. And this voltage gets used up. There are natural losses, the wires heat up, and you can't transmit it over any great distance. So if Nikola Tesla hadn't invented the whole system of AC electricity and the motors and the generators and the transformers that link with it, then we would have all had, if we wanted to use electricity, had to either live within half a mile of a power station, which would have meant an awful lot of power stations to cover America, or we would have had to build them into our houses and had little generators in the cellar running to power the houses.
You know, it's interesting, as you point out, in this whole history of Tesla and the behind-the-scenes business dealings and his personality and how he made his decisions and all of that, that he, first of all, helped Edison perfect, as much as could be, the direct current by fixing things in order to win his favor, and then went on and you had the current wars, which you're going to explain to us. Very interesting, because I feel that there's similar situations at work today. Not necessarily did the best product win out all the time. Of course, AC did, because, as you explained, Tesla had to build the motor. He had to build the system, the transformers. They had to convince the public. I mean, it was really a very dicey situation that went on for many, many years. On this, even the kind of light bulbs that were used. And then he comes up a few years later proposing wireless power. I would have loved to have seen a world in which wireless power was the standard of the day and how that would have affected everything. That wasn't to be. But he wanted to then destroy the whole system that was then built up, and how all the businessmen freaked and said, no, we can't do this. And that was a very interesting story. So, as the world transforms, you come to these crossroads. We have to look in retrospect and see how little decisions, little personality traits can affect the world for decades to come. It's fascinating in that. Tell us the difference between Edison and Tesla in the way that each inventor worked.
Yes, they were as different as chalk and cheese. Tesla was a theoretician. He stated a number of places. He claimed that everything could be reduced to mathematics. He would sit down, he would work out in great detail before he even started exactly how something would work. Whereas Edison was the complete opposite. He never worked anything out in theory. He would actually develop things, he would fiddle with them, he would what he was called iron out the bugs, and he would try and get them working. And he would take something, he would have an idea, and he would fiddle with it until he made it work. Now, this served him very, very well, because Edison made his first money by, he was working as a telegraph operator, and he decided that with passing news along the wires, one of the things he could do was publish a paper with this news on, and he published this and sold it to train passengers, and he made his first money out of that. And then he went on and he developed all sorts of ways of improving the efficiency of the telegraph.
I have to interrupt you to take a break, but Edison's genius, as you point out, was finding a way to make money off the inventions and marketing. Not so with Tesla, although he was the better inventor. We're going to continue with Robert Lomas giving us an insight into, about 100 years ago, the goings-on that really set the stage for modern technology. It's a fascinating story of business, intrigue, and personality. I'm Laura Lee. This is The Laura Lee Show. We're talking with physicist Robert Lomas. His new book on Tesla is The Man Who Invented the 20th Century, Nikola Tesla, Forgotten Genius of Electricity. Robert, in looking at the life of Tesla and of Edison and looking at the comparisons between the two, Edison was quick to rush out his inventions, lay claim for them, and then perfect them later. Tesla, you point out, that on the other hand, would tinker around for years trying to perfect it and get the grand vision in place. And that was one of his failings, too. He should have gone out, claimed his territory, got his patents, found a way to make money at them, and put them into use and let industry then perfect them and take them where it wanted to go. It's would you explain that aspect?
That was one of his major problems. He had no sense with money. He rather felt that you shouldn't send him out with the family cow, because he'd probably come back with five magic beans, and if he did, the beanstalk wouldn't grow. And he actually started out in Paris when he was at the age of 27, and it was in 1883 in Paris. He started out working for one of the Edison companies there. And Edison had started to supply DC lighting systems particularly for the German railway. And the first one that he put in Stuttgart had been opened by the German Emperor, William I at the time. And when they turned it on, it blew the front wall out of the station. Well, naturally, the Germans were a little bit put off when this happened, and they were contemplating suing Continental Edison for this rather badly installed installation. And Nikola Tesla got sent across to Stuttgart to sort the installation out. And the guy who was running the Continental Edison system in Paris sort of hinted at him that there may well be a bonus in him. I think Tesla reckons that $25,000 got mentioned. Anyway, he sorted the system out. It took him a good few months, but he got it working. He got the whole station lighting system running properly. And then he went back to Paris to see if he could actually collect on this money he'd been promised. And nobody actually wanted to pay him. So he ended up falling out with them. But at the time, Thomas Edison had sent over one of his own troubleshooters from New York, a chap called Charles Batchelor. And Batchelor provided a letter of introduction to Nikola Tesla and said, why don't you go across to the States and work for Edison? He'll give you a job in New York, and then you can make a bit of money. So Nikola sets off to go to New York, and he ends up selling up all his possessions, packing everything he's got left into a trunk, buying himself a steamer ticket for New York, and then on the way to the station at Paris, he gets robbed. He lost his steamer ticket, he lost his money, and he lost most of his luggage. So all he actually had in his hand was his train ticket to the port, and his steamer ticket when he got there. So he could remember the number of the ticket for the steamer, and he went on the train and talked his way onto the ship and came to New York, and he literally had 4 cents in his pocket when he arrived in New York.
Like every good, make good story. Tell us a bit about the current wars and how Tesla had the idea. He had figured out the whole alternating current method long before and was really anxious for a chance to devise an engine, a motor that it would run on it, put this all in place. It was very interesting how he had the idea and it took him so long to finally build it, put a prototype, and some of the obstacles in his way to sell it, to get anybody to believe in him.
Well, he'd actually developed the idea at the age of about 20. And by the time he was working in Stuttgart for Continental Edison, he'd actually made a prototype AC generator. And he'd got the basic motor and generator, and he had them working at that time. And his idea when he went across to New York to work for Edison was that he would tell Edison about this idea, and Edison would be very interested in it. Well, in fact, he arrived across in New York, and Edison was actually in quite a lot of financial problem difficulty at that time, because Edison had built this first power station in Pearl Street in New York, and he got more customers than he expected. And the problem he was having was he couldn't couple his generators together. The biggest generator he could make would power about 500 electric lights. And if he wanted to add any more customers with more lights, he needed to put another generator and connect the two together. And what he found happened, when he connected his generators together, one generator drove the other like a motor. So you got a system which is called hunting. And actually what Edison himself wrote in his diary, that when they first connected two of these generators together, they had the biggest circus since Adam was a boy, and it nearly destroyed the power station. So Edison solved the problem by creating a mechanical linkage between the steam generators of the two generators he'd made, so that it had a mechanical system to stop the one generator driving the other. And he couldn't put a third generator onto it. He was really in great difficulty. He couldn't add any more customers. Well, Tesla had had the idea already. If you could control the pulses on a DC generator, you could actually link them together. So he designed a generator, and he went along to Edison and said, I've got a better system than you've got, but we can use the control principles of the system I've got to improve your system, and then we could think about putting the new one in place. So Edison, who was a really good...
You'll hear the rest of the story just after this as Robert Lummis continues. He's talking about the early years of Nikola Tesla and Thomas Edison fighting for whose system, AC or DC, alternating or direct current, wins the day. It's an interesting story of personality, business, and we'll hear the rest of it just after this. I'm Laura Lee. Laura Lee here on The Laura Lee Show. Our guest, physicist Robert Lummis, talking about the life and the work of Nikola Tesla. And Robert, you're describing how Tesla first went to Edison and tried to ingratiate him to this great man and inventor. And you know, you do a nice character analysis of Tesla in your book, and you say he really suffered from a lack of self-esteem. He had so much genius. His inventions were so thorough and workable, and that he really should have gone out and found his own backer or his own entrepreneur to find the venture capital for him. I mean, he would play a very different game in today's society where people are actively looking for geniuses like that. And it could have been a very different history for himself and I think for the world. But instead, looking at the way things did transpire, it's interesting, all these near misses he had. And he went about it all wrong, as you point out, in trying to raise money and get the credit that he was due and get his inventions out there. And it's sad that only for a very few years in his life did he have the money and the leisure to pursue his own interest and came up with all sorts of inventions. I think the world was at a loss, and the people who dealt with them were really stupid for not really saying, here, Nikola, here's a lab, here's all the money you need, go for it. Tell us whatever you invent. We'll find the commercial aspects for it. You just go and invent. I mean, that's what he really should have been doing all those years.
It should have been, but he'd actually had a very traumatic experience as a child. At the age of 6, his elder brother, who was 10 at the time, was killed by his father's favorite horse, and Nikola saw him die. And he then became the major. It was the only boy left in the family. He had three elder sisters, but there was no other boy. So he became the focus of his father's ambitions, and he felt he was never able to fulfill them. And I think that gave him problems both with women and with his mother for the rest of his life. Hmm. But the way it tended to manifest itself was that he looked for father figures. And when he first went to work for Edison, he saw him as a father figure. And so he actually went to the man who was his major competitor and offered him the system that he had thought through. And of course, all Edison saw was the major threat. And so he ended up treating Tesla rather badly. In fact, he offered him $50,000 to link his generators together and then refused to pay him. Mm-hmm. So Tesla walked out on him. And he had by this time learnt a little bit of business sense. So he set up as a minority shareholder in an electric lighting company and developed a very, very successful arc light for public lighting. The company made a lot of money, but Tesla made nothing out of it because he had a minority shareholding, and when he tried to cash it in, the people who'd set the company up didn't want to buy him out. So the money, that became worthless. So he actually ended up digging ditches. And for the best part of 2 years, he literally just worked as a labourer, and he was earning a few cents a day for digging ditches, and that was when he had his only good break. He met with the foreman of the gang he was actually working for, happened to know A.K. Brown, who was one of the directors of the Western Union Telegraph Company, and Tesla was talking about these ideas he had for revolutionizing the distribution of electricity. And it got back to Brown that there was this bright young engineer, the one who'd created all the arc lights, the one who'd solved Edison's problem of linking his generators, who was digging ditches, and he was looking for a sponsor. So Brown took a gamble with him, and he sponsored him. And literally for the next couple of years, Tesla lived off the money that Brown had provided him. And during that time, he established the 32 basic patents that eventually created the worldwide electrical industry that we've got today. And it was only during that period that he made any money. And he sold these patents as a job lot to Westinghouse, who was one of Edison's major competitors. And that's the first time that he was actually successful. Now, unfortunately, Mr. Brown, who was his mentor and looked after him, died fairly soon after this, and it left Tesla on his own again. And left to himself, he wasn't safe with money.
Or making good business deals. Yeah. So those 32 basic patents covered what? What sort of inventions?
He actually gave a lecture to the American Institute of Electrical Engineers, which is still the classic lecture on power engineering. It describes how to generate electricity, how to transmit it, how to turn it back into usable power, how to create motors with it, which are different sorts of motors, the sort of motors that drive all the heavy industry of the country, the sort of motors that we use in our, as the basis of all our electric locomotives. He designed these and demonstrated them to the American Institute of Electrical Engineering, the IEEE, and it's still the fundamental. And he did this at the age of about, we would have been 32.
Wow.
At the time he did this, and it's still the classic lecture. The interesting thing is he was more concerned in proving the theory and in demonstrating it to the Institute. Uh-huh. He was in actually selling it. And it was Mr. Brown who got Westinghouse to go along to the lecture he gave at the Institute of Electrical Engineers and then make him an offer for his patent. Because he was actually starting to, he was getting a little bit worried that Tesla wasn't going to make any money at all. Because he just didn't, he'd never thought in terms of selling things.
Yeah.
He thought in terms of getting the idea right, explaining the theory, and demonstrating it to scientists and engineers, rather than trying to turn it into a commercial product.
And you explained how Westinghouse latched onto these patents because they provided him with the very technology he needed to win this war against Edison, for whose... I didn't know this, but Westinghouse was actually manufacturing a light bulb where he deliberately misinterpreted Edison's patent on this. And there was legal battles. Westinghouse almost went bankrupt. I mean, the trials and travails of the early industrialists are just fascinating.
Edison had patented the electric light bulb. And basically, everybody else was trying to pirate his patent, and Westinghouse was amongst the people. He was actually misinterpreting deliberately, as it turned out, because he lost the case. The patent that Edison had put forward, and was making Edison light bulbs without paying any royalties to Edison.
And Edison almost went bankrupt as well, too. That's interesting. But go ahead.
Yeah. This went on for quite a while, and there was a long going court battle. But the basic difficulty was he couldn't get at the patents for collecting generators together. So if he was going to challenge Edison's grip on the electricity industry, which Edison had established at that time, he had to come in with a different way of doing it. And Tesla, when he gave this lecture at the Institute of Electrical Engineers, had provided everything that was needed. So in fact, Westinghouse went in and bought the whole set of royalties as a whole group, Tesla, and he also agreed a royalty with Tesla, and it was to be $1 a horsepower for every installed set that he made. Now, if Tesla had actually kept that royalty for the rest of his life, he would have been he would have become a billionaire. He would have been the Bill Gates of his time.
And then he could have financed his wireless power. He could have financed anything he wanted. He could have spent all of his time inventing. There was a story that goes around that he magnanimously gave back the royalties to Westinghouse when he was in a bit of a money crunch. But you say that once again he was duped. How does that story go? He thought it was a temporary.
That story was actually publicized by John J. O'Neill in a biography he wrote in the 1950s, and it's much more romantic than the truth. Because if you actually go back to what Tesla said in a number of court transcripts when he was being chased by one of the hotels he was living in for money, he actually commented that the reason he'd lost the royalties was that he hadn't understood the contract. Westinghouse had come to him and offered him an outright deal to take the royalties out of them. And Tesla had thought that he was actually giving them up for a three-month period and would then get them back. And he'd never read the small print. And Westinghouse, I don't think, went to any great trouble to explain it to him. So Westinghouse himself had problems because he just lost a court battle with Edison. He couldn't make Edison-type electric light bulbs, and he was virtually bankrupt. Edison had been had been ousted from his own company by a chap from the Thomson Houston Company called Charles Coffin, who'd done a deal with Edison's bankers. So Edison had already lost his own company to the bankers, and they pursued the patents. Westinghouse had lost the patent battle, and he was absolutely desperate. If he hadn't managed to dupe Tesla out of that royalty, the Westinghouse Electric would not exist today.
Hmm. And that was one of the problems. Everyone else put their name to a company. Tesla might have done that early on had things been a little different, and who knows what other inventions he would have gotten to that we would have put in place. What intrigues me is that the well-known battle of Pierpont Morgan suppressing wireless transmission of power. You explain how Morgan, again, duped Tesla, led him along, strung him along, with the intent of not allowing his invention to become a reality and widespread. That's interesting. Could you explain the difference between, here it was, AC power was now in place, and it was off and running, and there were a lot of industrialists making money off this. And then Tesla goes off to Colorado Springs, carries on some further experiments. Observing nature was one of the clues that he took to the workings of the universe and these universal laws and how to apply them. Comes up with the idea of wireless transmission of power, really seeing the earth and electricity differently. Can you explain what he was trying to achieve and how he, again, was forbidden from achieving that goal? How would, and then let's also talk about how wireless power and also wireless transmission of information, had it ever been put in place, how it would have changed society, changed the world, changed the technology that we use today.
Well, what Tesla had conceived, and we're now talking about the turn of the last century. So we're talking about the sort of late 1890s, early 1900s. He'd had an idea that it would be possible to resonate the earth and to transmit electric power through something which a modern physicist would call the Schumann cavity. There's actually, the earth is an electrically charged body. It acts like a giant capacitor. And
it stores electricity, or energy, in other words. That's what a capacitor is, right?
Yes.
Stores.
A capacitor is like two great conducting plates, and one of them would be the surface of the Earth, and the other one would be the ionosphere.
Okay.
And what Tesla had worked out was that if he could vibrate the electric potential between these plates, and he used a frequency which was resonant with the Earth's electrical frequency, which he'd also measured very, very accurately, then he would be able to transmit power through the air. So all you would need to do would be to put up like a radio antenna, and you'd be able to pull power down it. Now he'd run out of money. he developed a radio system. This was 10 years before Marconi had developed radio, and he'd been about to demonstrate it when his labs caught fire, and he'd forgotten to insure the labs. He'd run out of money totally. He'd scraped together a small amount of cash from well wishers, and he'd gone to Colorado to test this new idea, and he actually proved it to work. He transmitted large quantities of electric power, literally kilowatts of electric power. That's enough to light, a kilowatt is enough to light, if you take an ordinary light bulb as about 100 watts, it will light 10 ordinary light bulbs, or one bar electric fire. Now he was transmitting enough to run 3 or 4 1 bar electric fires over distances of up to 200 miles around Colorado in the 1900s without using wires. Now, he then patented all this, got his patents in place, because he was getting a bit more sensible with his business technique.
At least he learned to patent his ideas, okay.
Oh, yes, so he got the patents in place. And he conceived this idea, which was almost an internet of its day. He decided what he wanted to do was to build a world system, and the system would transmit power, it would transmit radio broadcasting,
uh-huh.
It would have transmitted music, just the way that your radio station transmits today. He had the idea that it would also transmit power with the music and with the speech.
And let's talk about how he did this, what the technology was involved, and what the vision further was, and then what happened so that we don't have it in place today. We continue with physicist Robert Lomas on the life and work of Nikola Tesla. I'm Laura Lee. Laura Lee here on The Laura Lee Show. We continue with Robert Lomas telling us about the life and the work of Nikola Tesla, genius inventor. So he's in Colorado Springs, and you point out, and I love the way that as a physicist you make the scientific observations of Tesla and the properties of electricity so clear to us. Thank you. Your students must love you for that, because us non-science types really do, too. We can follow along here. But you say that a couple of observations of Tesla, he looked at storms there in Colorado with the high altitude and clear skies and dry air. He noticed that storms make a standing wave on the backdrop of Earth. So he had very different ideas about this, and we can talk later about his arguments with Einstein on the properties of gravity, and his observations really led him to look at gravity as a wave, and it gets really interesting. We'll talk about that in a bit. But you said later that the Mir space station observed that lightning storms always appear in regularly spaced lines across the dark side of the Earth. So here Tesla's looking at the Earth, like some of the equipment in his laboratory, some of the same principles are applying natural forces to what he's setting up, working his experiments. And you said he could already make the Earth ring like a bell with resonance. If he found the resonance of the Earth and he applied that resonance, he could either break it apart. Luckily, he didn't try that experiment, or make it ring like a bell. He found Earth's resonance frequency. We now know what that is. Engineers have confirmed that today. And he used very long waves, what we call VLF, or very low frequency waves, that would travel easily right around the Earth. So is that what he was going to use to conduct this information and energy transmission, or was it through the ground? Was it through the air? I've heard arguments on both sides of the fence on what Tesla was actually trying to do. Could you tell us, in your opinion, what was he really trying to do?
Yes, well, he's very clear, actually, because it's the one period where he kept a working journal. And he was running two labs at the time, so it was important to keep them linked together. He had an assistant back in New York who was making things for him, and he wrote very detailed instructions. So, unfortunately, the Tesla Museum has published something called the Colorado Springs Notebook. And his entry, when he noticed this phenomena of the storms spacing out and getting stronger and weaker as they travelled further away, was quite remarkable, and he got tremendously excited about it, because that was when he realized that the Earth, even though it was quite enormous, behaved just like a spherical copper ball on top of his antenna. And he could say, right, I can forecast how these waves will work. And the difference between his approach to radio and Marconi's approach to radio is Marconi was using a much higher frequency, and he was transmitting Morse code. He was basically transmitting a signal or no signal, so it was a simple dot or a dash, and sending Morse with it. Tesla had worked out, though, that he could actually use sound modulations, and he could transmit sound, he could transmit music, but he was using much lower frequencies.
Now, are these the same in principle that the humpback whale would use to communicate miles across the ocean, these long, slow waves of sound? They travel so slowly that they can power, in pretty much the same power, reach the other side of the ocean without diminishing because they're so low and slow. Is this the same in principle that Tesla was going to use?
That's exactly the same principle. He was making use of the large mass of the electrical power within the Earth, and he was making very small movements to it. If you think about if you take a large trough of water, bath of water, and you put your hand in it, and you let your hand move to and fro in time with the movement of the water, you can increase it. It's like pushing a child on a swing.
Right.
If you push the child when the swing reaches the top of its swing, and just give it a little push as it reaches the top, that the swing will go faster and faster and faster. And this is what he planned to do. He was going to take the natural background frequency of the Earth and modify it so that his signals could have been picked up literally anywhere. And he'd also conceived a system rather like our geostationary system now for working out where ships are, where he could work out exactly where a ship was by setting up a series of these transmitters and measuring the interference patterns. This is in the 1900s. Well, Marconi was just getting starting
and
to transmit more signals.
And you said he laid out a whole array of frequencies and he found the signal that could stimulate each frequency independently. So basically he had the channel system of radio.
He developed the system of channels for radio and he actually patented it. So he had a complete system patented for very low frequency transmission for both power, for information, and also for intelligence and music.
Now, when I ask how would the world be different if Tesla had put all of these systems in place, is not a rhetorical question. You get the equivalent of the internet and worldwide communication, and power, abundant power. At that early stage, we would live in a very different world today. But go ahead with your story.
We would have done, because we would have all the benefits that we see today from the internet and the ability to communicate. We could have had 100 years earlier if this system had ever taken off.
And I think that we would have avoided both world wars that we fought. You know, I think that just one example of some of the social changes that would have taken place.
Well, it's possible, because there would have been better communication, and part of the grinding poverty that drove the wars, he could have eliminated. Because he had the idea of taking sort of as many flowing rivers as possible, and putting turbines on them to generate electricity, and simply distributing it free, because that's where he came unstuck.
Right, that's what threatened the financial powers that held.
Yes, because. The first person he approached for help and in promoting this idea when he came back from Colorado was George Westinghouse. And he basically wrote to Westinghouse saying, I've got a new idea that will totally scrap everything you've invested in. Would you like to support me?
Because
Westinghouse didn't.
If Westinghouse, though, had been a bit more of a visionary, or Morgan for that matter, he would have said, gosh, let me help and tie up the patents and everyone has to now come through us for a better system. And, you know, we know that you can have a computer today, but everybody wants the new generation tomorrow. You're always going to improve on this technology, right? You're always going to make it more efficient, or you could go into certain applications for the use of this. I mean, that would have been handled very differently today, I think, because business people would have seen better opportunities. But we're looking at history and the what-ifs, what could have been, as we continue this next hour talking with Robert Lomas on the life and the work of Nikola Tesla, understanding those contributions, and looking at a vision of what might have been. I'm Laura Lee. And continuing our conversation with Robert Lomas, physicist and author of a new book on Nikola Tesla, we're looking at Tesla's life. We're looking at the what-ifs. Here was the greatest inventor ever, whose legacy we still use today, and so many people barely know his name. Life just ain't fair. There were a couple of personality quirks of Tesla that Robert analyzes and says, you know, this is what contributes to his state. It wasn't that everyone was out to suppress him necessarily. It was that the man didn't know how to play the game very well of business and winning in promotion. But in looking at what might have been, Robert, we were just talking about how J.P. Morgan took on Tesla when he went to him with the request that he help develop his wireless power and communication system worldwide, all for the idea of, well, now my competitors won't take Tesla and develop this, but really with the idea that he would string them along and then finally disallow the patents from being used to build the system because he had control of them. He drove a very hard bargain for Tesla, who was desperate for money at the time, as you point out. And I'm just wondering at the short-sightedness of Morgan. Here he was supposed to be this fantastic businessman, but when somebody comes to you with a idea for a system that could be used worldwide, so your market was not just America, but the world, where, granted, you couldn't meter the electricity being used, but what you could do was charge a monthly fee, in which everybody in the world would have wanted the system. You could keep selling them better and better products to pull down the electricity that would have been just there for the asking. So you always are having manufacturing products to sell the entire world. When you could license applications for the type of motors and engines and technology, much as Bill Gates licensed the software that everybody wanted to use, I mean, there would have been ways for Morgan to make an immense legacy, help the world, and make immense profits forever and ever on this. And yet he thought that Tesla's idea, despite its worldwide appeal, that everybody in the world would want this system, that it would have really put a jump start to everything and a worldwide communication basis. Think of the riches in that. Instead, he just wants to kill the deal without really confronting Tesla on it. He just wanted to slowly pull it out from Tesla and not make it possible for that to develop. I'm just astounded. Can you explain
a bit further? Really to look at it from Morgan's perspective, because he was a traditional banker. He wasn't really an engineer. So part of his problem, I think, was that he didn't understand quite what Tesla was offering him. He knew Tesla had a good track record because he'd taken over now what was now General Electric, and in fact is one of the biggest and most successful electrical companies in the world today. So he wasn't all wrong in his thinking, but what he saw was a major threat to the investment that had gone on over the last 20 or 30 years. They'd developed an industry, they'd spent a lot of money putting power lines up. They were actually paying royalties to Westinghouse to use the Tesla patents to transmit this power. And then Tesla comes along to him with an idea which is very, very difficult to actually control and meter. You suggested it could be done on the basis of a flat fee. Yes, it could, but nobody was thinking that way in those days. They were thinking in terms of metering the system, and it was totally impossible to meter the system. There was no way you could measure what anybody was taking out of it. And Morgan was basically looking for a fast buck. He had a business that was turning over a large amount of money. He had the man who had developed it developing an alternative and different business, and he got both. So he was backing both horses. He was backing the traditional AC electricity supply company that had grown up in that industry, and he had a major hold on that. And Tesla came with this totally radical alternative, which meant building an entirely new infrastructure from scratch. Well, that's quite a gamble. And you have to remember that when Morgan had been involved with Edison earlier on, Edison had to take the risk of creating the electric light switches, the bulbs, the fittings, and all the necessary street furniture that went with the system.
Yeah.
And it was only when that was actually proved to be working that the bankers bought him out.
Oh,
so
I see.
They hadn't taken a risk even with Edison. Edison had taken the risk. And Morgan was just risk averse. He would not gamble. He wanted a guaranteed return, and he wanted a short return. how much is it going to make next week was the question. And the answer was, this wouldn't make a profit for a few years. You've got to plough money into it. Then you could have made very long-term profit. You just wouldn't take the risk.
Weren't there other financiers that Tesla could have gone to? Why did he settle on Morgan and allow Morgan to buy up the controlling interest in these patents? Why didn't he go around and shop it to other?
It was the same reason he went to Edison. He saw Morgan as a father figure, as a paternal figure, and because Morgan had been successful in supporting the industry, he'd been successful in creating the General Electric Company, Tesla went to him because he obviously knew what he was doing. It never occurred to him that he was actually going with something which was competitive. So he spent most of his life going along to his competitors and trying to persuade them to support him in an idea that would destroy their existing business.
Okay, I've got another question. Here we are today, 100 years later, and we understand that Tesla's patents and principles worked. Here you have patents that no longer have royalties attached to them. The patent licensees have run out, I'm assuming. And why isn't some entrepreneur and company going to third world companies and looking at streams and putting in bladeless turbines and saying, here's a great way to generate electricity efficiently? And why isn't somebody going around and saying, or even in the days when nuclear power held sway, look at the immense cost with nuclear power, and most of it had to be paid on the back end for the cleanup, for heaven's sakes. Why wasn't somebody going and saying, hey, now we've got manufacturing and we've got the system in place where we could generate this kind of system? Why isn't this done today? Why isn't somebody with an immense lot of money going and saying, oh, let's have worldwide communication. Let's have electricity you can pull down from the air. Let's put out flat fees for some of this equipment. Let's manufacture a piece of equipment that everybody on Earth would want to buy.
Well, I think that there's two reasons why that's not happening. One is that the electromagnetic spectrum is now very well used and very widely used. So at the time when Tesla proposed this, there were no broadcasting stations, so there wasn't a tremendous use of the radio spectrum. And the other thing is that we've also learned something that he wasn't aware of, that if we transmit power at a very high frequency, it can cause you problems physically. For instance, if you're using high frequency radar, you don't allow anybody to go near the radar dish, and that's transmitting pulses of power. And whenever you're actually using a microwave link to transmit power, you're very careful that nobody actually gets in the line of it. It's exactly how a microwave oven works.
Oh, so it's a good thing.
You could end up frying your eyeball or your brain.
So it is. I was going to ask you about the safety of all of this, but I thought extremely low frequencies. Now they're finding in the laboratory that even slightly altered magnetic fields can have an effect on our health. They're finding that.
Well, the reason I think we would be hesitant about using that technology today is that the sort of frequency he was using are very, very close to the fundamental frequencies of the brain. The basic theta rhythm is somewhere in the region of 7 to 8 cycles, which was a sort of resonant the frequencies he was talking about playing with. And the other point is that the amount of information you can carry on a very low frequency wave is very limited. Mm-hmm. So that pushes you towards a higher frequency. And when you move towards a higher frequency, you get this problem of ionizing radiation within the tissue, which can cause serious damage. So although it would have been possible to develop it, the system wasn't quite as resilient and as wide ranging as he would have liked to have thought it was. It wouldn't have carried as many consumers as he would have liked to have done.
And it would have been dangerous. It would have been dangerous. Also, the 60 cycles, alternating current on 60 cycles, and we're finding out how power lines can pose a danger if you live too close to them, and they say don't sleep with your head next to your electric clock because it's putting out a field that can affect your brain over time and all of that. So, you know, this stuff does have an effect on us. How did he happen on 60 cycles per second? Was that he found because the motors that were designed to use alternating current worked better? Would there have been another frequency he could have used that would have been less harmful to humans?
It was very much a compromise that was brought about between the work we did with an engineer called William Stanley. Stanley actually wanted to use 160 cycles a second, but if you to use that, you had problems synchronizing the motors, and so the 60 cycles that's used in the States and the 50 cycles that's used in Europe was actually a compromise that was arrived at between Stanley and Tesla, and we've just stuck with it. It's amazing how standards which are developed for quite arbitrary reasons stay with us for an awful long time, because the moment you've built a lot of generators that are rotating at this speed, it becomes very, very difficult to change it.
You're stuck, huh?
Yes.
So, well, I also wonder that had Tesla's free energy been put into place, free energy meaning abundant energy, everybody would have paid for it, and I'm assuming if had it been put in place. But you wonder, do we have the spiritual wisdom to handle it? You think of terrorists now having a better means to, you know, blow up the earth, shake the earth, and make threats to do so if their needs aren't met. I mean, you can imagine science fiction scenarios in which things could go horribly wrong. So maybe it was a good thing that Morgan chose to do as he did, huh?
Although, well, I don't think he was thinking along those lines, though. It was simply a short... I think if some of the technology had been incorporated, particularly the ideas about multiple channel broadcasting, then we would have developed worldwide communications at a much, much earlier stage. And I think it's a great pity that we didn't actually do that.
Yep. And we continue with Robert Lomas just after this. I'm Laura Lee. You're listening to The Laura Lee Show. Our guest, Robert Lomas, physicist. Robert, I want to ask you about Tesla's arguments with Einstein over the nature of gravity. Give me a little backdrop. You say that most of Tesla's inventions were based on the principle of waves and resonance, and he thought of gravity in that category.
He did. And in fact, towards the end of his life, he had a public row with Einstein. At the time, Einstein had just published his general theory of relativity, and the basic premise he was putting forward was that gravity was caused by curvature of space. Now, what Tesla wrote a public refutation of this, saying he can't possibly be right, because if space was curved, it would counteract the gravitational field. And he was quite convinced that gravity was a field phenomena. Now, the interesting thing was that he's proved to be right. Hmm. Because in the late 1980s, we did actually succeed in measuring gravity waves from a pulsar system in the far reaches of space. And it seems that he has a point, that gravity is a field phenomena, that gravity waves do have a speed of travel. We don't know what it is yet, but we are certain that it does happen because we've measured the interference from pulsars. So he was always threatening towards the end of his life that he was going to publish a theory that would disprove Einstein's theory of general theory of relativity, and would prove that it was possible to communicate faster than light. And it's only recently, with the discovery of particles like tracheons, that we've actually come to the view that he may well have been right, and that it is possible to transfer information at a speed that is faster than light, which of course Einstein's theory of general relativity
says you can't. Yeah, you say that Tesla realized that heat and light and radio, sound, alternating magnetism, and alternating electricity were all the same mathematically. So would gravity be part of that whole? Is that what you're suggesting?
That's what he was saying. And he said that he had actually integrated this into his theory. And he had a wave theory of gravity that he was going to publish, which would explain all the anomalies that Einstein had noticed in the orbit of Mercury, which had led to the lead had led him to develop the general theory of relativity. But unfortunately, he never published it. So we don't actually know where his thinking was taking him.
Or he must have written down some notes. And what happened to all of Tesla's papers that hadn't been published?
That in itself is another strange story. Because even on the week he died, he got himself into a frightful muddle. Because on the Monday before he died, he rang the... It was during the war, it was 1943, January 1943. And he, on the Monday of that, the week he died, he rang the US War Department and told them he'd invented a death ray. And he'd like to give it to them so that they could use it to defeat the Germans. He then was taken ill, and he instructed the hotel staff not to allow anybody into his room, and nobody's quite sure when he died. He was found dead on the Thursday. And at that stage, the chap he'd rung up at the War Department, the Colonel Erskine, suddenly realized he'd been talking to this famous inventor, because he thought he was just a wacky old man who'd rung him up. Tesla had died. His nephew broke into his safe, claiming to be looking for a will, which he probably was. The FBI found out about it, and all hell was let loose, because they thought that his nephew, who was of course a Yugoslavian national,
was a spy
and was trying to steal the death ray, and it was going to be used against them. So all Tesla's goods and chattels were seized. The custodian of alien property got involved. The U.S. Navy got involved. The FBI got involved. And anybody who asked about Tesla for years afterwards got a file opened on them.
Oh, really? Huh. So we just don't know. I mean, hasn't the...
Well, we know where his material ended up. It was taken to Belgrade,
mm-hmm.
and a museum was established in the 1950s for the Tesla Museum. But we don't actually know what's happened to it nowadays, because, of course, Belgrade suffered very serious bombing recently.
Oh, no.
And I spoke at the Orkney Science Festival about 3 weeks ago with a Slovenian physicist who was also talking about Tesla, and we shared a platform. And this chap, Andrew Detella, says that he hasn't been able to contact the Tesla Museum since the start of the bombing campaign.
Wow.
Against Serbia, and we just hope that all Tesla's artifacts and papers were actually taken to safety. We don't actually know whether the museum was damaged or whether they made them safe. The museum's website hasn't been updated now for the best part of 3 years, and any attempts to email them or write to them, they're not responding. So we just hope that they did actually save his material.
Good heavens. Now, hasn't somebody in the intervening years, though, gone to the museum and said, let's at least transcribe this and, you know, put it out in books? Or
the museum has done,
has done quite a good job
of publicizing what working notes he had. But Tesla was a very difficult man to work with. Part of his problem was he had a photographic memory. He tended to develop his thoughts and his designs in his head and then simply reproduce them and tell people what should be done. So there's very few. He didn't keep an awful lot of working notes.
Uh-huh.
Most of the notes he did keep have already been published.
Oh, that's good. And what about the State Department and National Security Act? If they thought that he had actually invented a death ray and had notes or drawings or whatever, wouldn't they have confiscated those and put those tucked away? You know, classified?
Well, in fact, they did. He was declared top secret for a period of 10 years, but, of course, he's now long out of the Freedom of Information Act.
Right.
So all his papers, all the papers that are in the Library of Congress are now readily available. So, really, there's no secret documents connected with him any longer. Just the hope is that his artifacts and his original writings were not destroyed during the bombing of Serbia.
Hmm. And of course, we wish it would have been.
Basically, it wasn't Tesla's fault that he happened to come from Serbia.
And we would have wished that he might have written down a bit more than he did, or at least published a few more of those theories, like the one on gravity. We continue with Robert Lomas, and we'll ask him next about Tesla's quirky personality. Why did he not get on with women? Why did he have an aversion to pearls? Carson was saying that probably he chose 60 cycles per second for his alternating current because he thought that threes and nines were the superior number and 60 is divisible by by that. We continue talking about the life and the work of Nikola Tesla. I'm Laura Lee. I'm Laura Lee. This is The Laura Lee Show. Our guest, Robert Lomas. His new book is The Man Who Invented the 20th Century, and you might look for his other works, all fascinating, well-researched. And tell us a bit more about the quirky personality that Tesla is famous for, Robert.
Well, I think part of his problem as he got older was that he never suffered fools particularly gladly, and he got worse as he got older. I think probably the thing that stands out about him, he was awarded the Edison Medal by the Institute of Electrical Engineers, and he gave the longest recorded acceptance speech that's ever been written down, and it was taken down verbatim by the secretary of the American Institute of Electrical Engineers.
16,000 words, you write?
16,000 words that it took him the best part of 2 hours to deliver his acceptance speech.
It's worse than Clinton.
Normally, it's a two-minute thank you.
Back to his quirks in a moment. We have a call for you from Mike in New York City. Hello, Mike.
Yes.
There you are in Tesla's old stomping grounds, but go ahead.
Yes, I have a question. How are you, Laura Lee?
Good, thanks.
I understand that the Internet was originally invented by a physicist out of Switzerland. And my question, you were talking before about the great idea that Tesla would have, since his idea was so wonderful and J.P. Morgan was kind of the financier. We also noticed today that the Internet has been declared a monopoly. Originally, it was given permission to go online by the Justice Department because originally it was a security network, and I wonder if your guest could comment on the creation of that security network and how it eventually ended up into the hands of a personal entrepreneur, and now it's back in the hands of antitrust.
Interesting. And tell us about that one man who invented some key software for the Internet, and he chose not to take patents or royalties. He wanted it to be for the good of the Internet and the community using it. Go ahead, Robert. Thanks, Mike, for your question.
Thank you.
It's a very interesting parallel because Mike's quite right. The Internet did start out as a security network. It was at the time of the Cold War when everybody was seriously concerned that how would you maintain communications in the event of nuclear strikes. And so a system was set up which enabled computers to talk to each other using whatever means of communication was available. So you could communicate over landlines, you could communicate by satellite, and it would find a link through. And it got taken up by, first of all, by the military community to develop a robust command and control system that would survive a nuclear attack. And then it grew from that and was taken on very much as an academic area. And so universities got involved, they started providing servers and they started linking together. And it was from that that it suddenly people realized it had a commercial potential. And as the commercial potential developed, so it's grown into the system that we see today. But there is, of course, it's the opposite point to the one we were talking about earlier, Laura, where we were saying the J.P. Morgan actually suppressed the new technology. Here we've got a technology that's been taken up. You can't really win because under these circumstances, you then get accused of taking too much of the market. It's almost a no-win situation.
Yeah. Back to Tesla's quirks that you were giving us a list of. I just wanted to also comment, where there's a will, there's a way. If we can't have worldwide radio a la Tesla, you know, we soon found a way for worldwide communication. And it's interesting,
well,
isn't
your
it?
Your radio show goes out through the Internet as well, doesn't it? So people can actually listen through the net, even if they can't pick up your radio waves.
I also understand that radio waves go out through space, as do television waves. And so, really, if you have the technology or somebody out there, you know, out on Alpha Centauri, you can hear what this world has been broadcasting for years.
Yes, you can. I mean, that's one of the ways that we're looking, that the academic community is assisting to look for extraterrestrial life. Because one of the things a lot of us do is that when your computer networks are standing idle, you do processing for the SETI project. and were processing radio telescope information and simply looking for patterns in the data that comes in, which is other people's broadcasting, extraterrestrial. Nothing's been found yet, by the way.
But there you have another global communication system, people linking up their computers across the world and diverting it all to the common database to see what they found, right?
That's right. And when you process your package, you ship it back and they send you another one to process.
Yep.
And although I've done a lot of processing, I haven't found anything interesting yet. But coming back to Tesla, he did some very strange things.
Well, he was even talking about communicating with Mars.
He was quite convinced from his theory that radio waves would propagate through empty space, that they weren't just conducted round the Earth, which is what Marconi had believed at the time. And he was suggesting that we should be attempting to communicate with Mars. And he was suggesting this back in the early 1900s.
Mm-hmm.
Long, long before SETI was set up.
For the purpose of finding if there was life there.
That's right.
Yeah.
And although he did actually get very excited when he discovered some repetitive signals. And the common view now is that what he probably heard was a pulsar, but he didn't know what it was. He did actually write some quite lurid articles about what he'd discovered. He did tend to go off at a tangent.
Mm-hmm.
Because both he and Edison were approached with a suggestion that they might have won a Nobel Prize. And Edison was streetwise enough to know that you're told if you won a Nobel Prize and didn't make any comment. And Tesla sounded off at great length about how well deserved it was, and it actually went to somebody else. So he was a bit inclined to get carried away at times.
But now when we have probes that go to Mars and communicate back with us, we are indeed communicating with Mars through wireless technology.
It was a very interesting thought watching the Sojourner experiment with the Mars rover, watching them live on the net. You couldn't help think of Tesla's original thoughts about communicating with Mars, and it was proof. We were not just using radio links back to NASA, but NASA was putting the pictures straight out onto the net. So we were actually watching it through two of the systems that he'd proposed.
Huh.
And was laughed at at the time when he suggested them.
And he should be also seen as the father of the SETI program, Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence, because he was out there suggesting it long before.
He was suggesting it.
Yep. And you say out of 12 of his predictions, 11 of them have come true, and the 12th is very likely in the near future.
Yeah, the only other one he was suggesting was the widespread use of broadcast power. And that is technically possible, but I don't know whether we will actually use it.
Because
although, in fact, we're using a variant of it, because whenever we transmit information by radio links or by satellite links, we are transmitting small elements of power. So technically he was correct, but I don't think it will ever go to the extent that he was thinking. Although there has been talk about setting up satellites which would convert sunlight into high-frequency power,
right,
and then beaming this down to collecting stations on the Earth.
Oh,
and
yes.
The only problem is, of course, you'd need to keep the beam very, very carefully aligned to the receiving aerial, otherwise it could cause damage.
Hmm.
But technically that is feasible. And so a lot of the predictions that he made, which got him really a bad reputation at the time, were workable systems. I think one of the funniest stories about him concerns his mechanical laxative.
Oh, yes, that was funny. You want to explain that one?
He was working on resonance, and he developed a mechanical platform which he could control and work at different speeds. And he discovered that at certain frequencies, it cured constipation. And he and his assistant were rushing their lunches, and they started to use it on a regular basis. And he'd made friends with the writer Mark Twain, Samuel Clemens. And Samuel Clemens suffered from constipation. And as you know, he habitually wore a white suit with white trousers. And on one particular day that Tesla wrote about in a letter to a friend, Twain came along to his laboratory, and he tried this mechanical laxative, but unfortunately he found the sensation of being vibrated so pleasant, he stayed on the platform much longer than was prudent. and they had to send out for a clean pair of trousers, but his constipation was definitely cured.
So there were some health benefits to Tesla. You say that he went around after that suggesting that this platform was a beauty aid, that women could become more beautiful by using this.
Yes, he wrote that in the New York Times.
And
so the women's beauty would be aided by regular use of this mechanical laxative.
Well, Dr. Sade would say, oh, sure, you know, that's part of the regime of health is that. But you said that just kind of underlined his ineptitude with women. He just really didn't understand women are felt in need for them.
He had tremendous difficulties getting on with women at all. He had tremendous difficulties getting on with most people. He never made any close friendships of any sort, but he seemed to have particular difficulties with women. His mother, I think, was rather a strong woman, and he spoke that she was a bit inclined to discipline him rather hard, and he found it very difficult to relate. There was a very interesting story told about Sarah Bernhardt, the actress, who fell in love with him. And he was a very romantic-looking, a very romantic-looking chap in his prime. We've got a picture of him in the beginning of the book, and he's got these sort of smouldering dark eyes and dark hair. And he was in Paris giving a talk to the Institute of Electrical Engineers there. And Sarah Bernhardt dined in the same restaurant as him. She walked past his table and very ostentatiously dropped a handkerchief. And he was ever the gentleman. He actually got up, returned the handkerchief to her, and then went back to his conversation.
Huh. Missed the perfect opening.
Yeah.
So, now, he was very touched to his mother, even though it seemed to be a bit of a problematic relationship with him, but he had a spiritual experience upon her death, a spiritual vision. He knew at the moment that she died. Could you explain that story?
Yes, it's another story that he wrote in a series of articles he wrote towards the end of his life, which he wrote a series of six articles for Century magazine. He mentioned this. Well, he'd actually been using his own electrotherapy device to induce sleep in himself. He'd been under a lot of strain. His mother died of a serious illness, and from the descriptions, it was probably some form of cancer. So she died rather slowly and painfully. He was there when he'd gone to visit her, knowing that she was ill, and he was there when she was dying. And he had a vision on the day she died, where he saw her on a cloud amidst a whole group of angels, and heard very religious music. And he actually rationalized it completely. The image he'd seen was a painting that he'd seen once of a vision of heaven. He'd imposed his mother's face on it, and it was an Easter morning, so the choir in the local church was singing, but at the time he found it very, very disturbing, and in fact, he ended up having a nervous breakdown, and he spent quite a while sort of feeling guilty about the fact he hadn't been there when she died, and he imposed a penance on himself that he would read the whole of the Bible, and he spent literally the 6 months after her death. Yeah, the first month or so, he had a nervous breakdown. The following 5 months, he spent reading the Bible from end to end.
And he said something in Revelations caught his attention.
He did, but he never said what. Hmm. He said it helped him understand the nature of electricity, and the nature of the way in which life replicates. And looking at what he talked about, he was talking about crystals. And it was interesting to read in Richard Dawkins' book that crystals are a simple form of replicator and could eventually, over time, create life. So you may have seen something like that. It seems a very Darwinian comment, which he never explained.
We have a few more minutes to spend with Robert Lomas. We'll ask him about some of the stories that go around about Tesla and the Tungsten explosion, about Tesla and the Philadelphia experiment, about Tesla and flying saucers, his opinions on those stories and conjectures to do with Tesla's work when we come back. I'm Laura Lee. Laura Lee here on The Laura Lee Show, talking about Nikola Tesla. with physicist Robert Lomas. Lots of stories go around about Tesla and his work. Because I suspect of the military applications of the death ray and other inventions, some people think that he had something to do with the Philadelphia experiment. Have you checked those stories out? What do you think?
Yes, I did. But part of the problem is that the Philadelphia experiment took place 6 months after Tesla had died. So he couldn't actually have had anything to do with it, not unless you believe the story that he faked his own death, which I find a little bit difficult to accept.
What did happen during the Philadelphia experiment? Do you think they were actually experimenting with changing through a clothing device?
Well, they were trying to create an invisibility field, and it's something that we use on modern ships nowadays, for particularly with minesweepers, where you actually try and create a magnetic effect. You make the ship magnetically neutral, mm-hmm. and you actually produce a resonant electromagnetic field, which effectively makes the ship disappear as far as a magnetic field is concerned, so that it can pass through mines. Now, they had the idea that at the time they could do this with light as well, and what they created was a very high frequency, very intense electromagnetic field. Now we actually know that this can produce amnesia, and so I think a lot of the effects that they observed were caused by irradiation of the crew by high frequency electromagnetic fields. And nowadays, with modern weapon systems, modern radar systems, we're very, very careful to make sure that you don't get the crew anywhere near these sort of radiations. In fact, you probably know the stories that even using a mobile phone can sometimes cause you a short loss of memory. So
yes.
It was very early experiments of these types, and they were actually trying to achieve invisibility. And, of course, the story's grown a great deal with the telling since.
So you don't think that people became invisible and went to another dimension and came back and were partly lodged in the
I don't think so. I think, people may have thought that happened to them. Mm. But, I mean, you can think that if you take LSD. And if you actually find that you've had an induced amnesia because you've had your brain waves, what are called, entrained. It's one of the problems that epileptics sometimes have when they're exposed to pulsing lights. It can cause an epileptic fit, and if your brain is exposed to the right frequency of electromagnetic pulses, it can cause very, very strange hallucinations. So I think the people who said that that these things happened to them mm-hmm. certainly believed it, but I don't think in reality that they actually went anywhere else.
And Tesla himself suffered amnesia by using his own electrotherapeutic device a little too much, didn't he?
He did. Mm-hmm. He was experimenting by passing high-frequency current through his own brain to see what effect it would have. And he did succeed in inducing amnesia in himself. In fact, it's a technique that's been that later got used for treating certain forms of depression, electroconvulsive therapy, and he was using that technique on himself. And so he did do some very strange things. It's hardly surprising people have taken the view mm-hmm. that he was a little bit odd, and have adopted him as almost an anti-hero.
Well, you say that when Morgan denied supporting his wireless power idea, then the rest of the world thought, oh, if Morgan, with all his business sense, doesn't want it, then Tesla must be a bit off. And then you said he dug his own grave a little deeper in that effect by giving interviews that were misunderstood, by not giving appropriate comments, that he really was his own worst publicity.
He took to writing lurid magazine articles in order to make money. And he did spend part... He was a very literate man. In fact, he earned his living in his 50s by doing translations. And he translated both prose and poetry into a number of different European languages. He spoke 16 languages.
16 languages.
Yeah.
Wow.
So he was quite good at translating other people's poetry, but himself, he was a very ponderous writer. And so he wrote very, very heavy tomes which were easy to misinterpret. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the predictions he was making about worldwide communications aiding world peace were very laudable sentiments, but when he was speaking, it was between the two world wars. And he was just basically laughed at. He was saying, he predicted supersonic flight, for example. Hmm. He said that if you flew high enough, you'd be able to fly much faster, and you would need less energy. He'd done all the calculations, and he worked out that you should be able to fly faster than the speed of sound. Well, of course, at that time, nobody had done it. So, he was laughed at.
So he was so far ahead of his time that he was just basically misunderstood.
That's right. But the result was, it was assumed that he was doing things that were almost magic. You get strange stories like he faked his own death and went off to South America with Marconi to build flying saucers. Hmm. Well, in fact, he had a strong dislike for Marconi, who he was quite convinced had pirated one of his patents. And in fact, 6 months after both of them were dead, he was proved right, because the U.S. High Court actually heard the patent action and found in favor of Tesla. So
well,
according to the U.S. High Court, Tesla actually invented radio, not Marconi.
We've come to the end of our 2 hours, and I want to thank you so much for your insights into Tesla, his life and his work, and his shortcomings and his genius. What do you want to say by way of conclusion?
I think really probably the best thing I could say at the end is to just quote one or two words from Tesla himself, what he said about his own work. And he actually said, "I continually experience an inexpressible satisfaction from the knowledge that my polyphase system is used throughout the world to lighten the burdens of mankind and increase comfort and happiness, and that my wireless system in all its essential features is employed to tender a service to all and bring pleasure to people in all parts of the world." I think that's a very appropriate quote to end on, and that's from Tesla himself.
He had his heart in the right place, and he did a lot of good for the world. So
he did.
Yeah.
Just wish he'd had a bit more business then.
Thank you so much. And I wish the next Tesla would show up on the scene and take us into the 21st century. Thank you, Robert Lomas. I'm Laura Lee.
This has been Conversation for Exploration, and I want to thank you for joining us on our tour around the universe at large here tonight. And join us next time. I'm Laura Lee.